Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
So don't say anything inappropriate because I'm recording now.
I can't promise anything that
don't
I've
don't you
want
to
said.
Say inappropriate things
I feel
now?
Like I always just say, I am inappropriate.
Yeah,
but
I feel that.
But it's not recorded, so no one knows anything.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think there are probably cameras, sneaky cameras.
Well, I think all of our phones are listening
devices.
Now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, literally recording devices in this room.
Hello, Google.
Hello, Amazon.
Tell me things, Facebook, about all of my neighbors
Siri
and friends.
Siri is listening. My phone just buzzed, so I definitely know for sure they're listening. They're like, hello, would you like to be sold more items?
And you're like, no, man. I just want to make a phone call. But you don't.
This
because...
isn't a phone. Wait. This
isn't my dad. Yeah. This is a cell phone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Problems of the internet.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, should we work?
Yeah, we got to get started.
I guess.
You got to do a little funny bit first.
Well, I understood.
Yeah. Good. So we are here, season 3, episode 33 of Podcast for Good. You like that, 3 and 33?
I do. I like that a lot, actually.
Lovely little numbers there. Mm-hmm. Today we're talking about medical bills and financial toxicity. My name is Heather Lucas. I am the fiscal and policy coordinator. Took me a minute. Wow. Mm. Fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive, and I am joined by...
Jerrica Ferguson. I handle marketing and development as the coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
Yes, and Jerrica will be joining me for the remainder of the season.
Whoop, whoop.
Hey, buddy.
I feel like we need, some fun intro music on that one.
I think that was it, right?
It was,
there.
Drum roll, Philip Kerrigan isn't with us anymore.
Ding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That was beautiful.
I think that could work.
I liked it.
See how it sounds.
Okay. So, like I said, we're talking medical bills and financial toxicity. I actually spoke to the executive director of the Mayday Foundation. Her name was Amy Raleigh. It was a fascinating conversation.
Yeah.
And, of course, every season or two, there are those charities where... they just compel me to want to give. Mm-hmm. And when I was talking with Amy, I was like, oh man, here's another one. Come on.
That's one of the best things about seeing you and Philip was you guys coming out and be like, dang, this is so good. I gotta
so
give.
Good. So good.
Yeah.
What they do is amazing and I love it.
It is really awesome.
Yeah. So it was very, very compelling. And the things that we talked about, some of the stuff when it comes to medical bills, come on with the costs and expenses that are associated with just treatments, basic treatments.
Well,
we talked mostly about cancer treatments, mm-hmm. which are extensive, but even just if you go in for a cold, a cough that just won't go away, come on with
I think
the
that kills me is the medical bill that comes 6 months after your medical bill.
Yeah,
right? Like you're like, okay, I have now a financial plan that I have to start paying these costs down, and all of a sudden you get another bill for $100, and you're like, I don't understand. What? I thought this was all tied in. I think that's one of the biggest issues.
Yeah, because you've had to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just madness.
It is, and it creates a lot of frustration, because as you see the bills coming in, you're starting to plan, okay, what can I spend this month for that bill? And then you're thinking that insurance is covering more than what.
Yeah.
And sometimes insurance doesn't cover anything.
Yeah.
And it could be very frustrating.
That was totally one of the things Amy talked about, is that we as people just don't really know what our insurance covers.
Right.
We don't know enough about it.
No.
But nobody cares to learn.
Yeah.
Because
it's insurance.
So unless you are like an insurance nerd who loves delving into like the details and the facts and the numbers, you don't care.
Right. But then you start to care though, right?
When you need it.
When you need it. And it's like, we got to have that prevention prior.
Yeah. Yeah. But that does lead me into the question of the podcast. So Jerick Ferguson, when you're broke or running low on money until payday, what's the first thing that you say, all right, I'm giving that cost up this time so I can pay my medical bills?
Yeah, so the first and easiest, unfortunately, is really food, right? Because I can figure out a different way when that medical bill, because the thing is if you don't pay medical bills, it goes, you can either get towards collection. I actually recently, for my own medical bill, just called and was like, so that payment isn't gonna work. Thankfully for me, they were able to like lower that down.
Okay.
But that increases the amount of time I have to pay it, right?
True.
But really, when I look at my own expenses, it immediately comes like food has to be the first, because everything else is being used for a bill. Because I think a lot of people that are in these circumstances realize like your medical bills, we don't necessarily plan, right? Everybody tries for an emergency fund, but things don't always work that way. And so I think when it comes down to like how much extra money do you have, that extra money turns to being like maybe going out to eat with friends or family, or maybe it is just your food expenses. Because, you know, we have to have a place to sleep. And so it's not like I can call my landlord and be like, hey, this month I'm thinking only 800, right? Like we're good, right? Because even if that was the case, I still have to pay that extra money sometime later. And
you
so I think when it comes for me, it's really that running low is food first, sadly, because everything else I feel like I have to have.
I know, I agree. Like, there are things that you feel like you can't do without, and if you do try to go without, it's harder to do. So, for me, absolutely food is number one. So there's no coffee, there's no going out. That stops way early.
And which then, hurts, because it's like social.
It is, yeah. So you isolate yourself, because you can't afford to be out. And then if that's not enough, then it's food that you have in your home, for sure. So then it's just like, I'm eating condiments, all right. And then after that, for me, it is actual medicine. Like, I have prescriptions that I will forego, because I can't afford them. I have to pay this stupid bill instead.
I think that's like the toughest thing that people just don't really openly talk about is, even if like it's not like I can cut my gas bill or my transportation budget, right? Because if I can't get to work, then I'm not getting paid. So okay, so that's a requirement. And to be going to work, you have to like be clean and have clothes and do these things, and you have to be in a professional setting, right? So you can't cut water bills, and you can't cut electricity. Like, there's things that you just can't even get down to, you know. And I think that's a such a large question, and why it interests me about the Mayday Foundation is because they're helping these families with these costs that are just more than just the treatment themselves. And I think that's where we tend to need to lean on, is if you can like, if you can upfront the cost of someone for that month of just being like, here's $500 to pay that one bill off, and it gives them like that $200-$300 buffer, man, that can change someone's life.
It can. It can
to completely give them just enough real like relief that they could be able to like make next month.
Well, and that's something too. Like, I am definitely guilty of having done this, but I'm sure you have too. Most people probably have. But like, calling out sick, so you don't have to spend the gas to go to work.
Oh, I definitely
like,
know what
I've
you
got
mean.
Sick pay.
Yep.
Okay, that can cover me, or but I can't afford gas to work today, tomorrow, and the next day until payday.
Well, particularly with how far you live, and I think, and because it's more affordable, we're out. You know what I mean? And so I think when we talk about affordability, when it comes to your costs of rent, but maybe your transportation budget's now higher. Like, there's a reason I started taking the bus more, right? Is because I looked at my own budget, like, gosh, if I could just have one less gas tank that I had to pay for.
When I lived in LA and gas was $5.60 a gallon, there were days for sure when I was like, okay, I know I can make it the 10 miles to work, which would take an hour and 15 minutes in traffic. Like, I can make it one day or 2 days out of the remaining days.
Yeah.
Like, there were days like that when it was just like, this is ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think like, I think at the end of it, when we talk about like, nobody expects to have an emergency fund for cancer.
Yes.
Right. No one expects to have an emergency fund for dealing with childhood sickness.
Mm-hmm.
I think people tried, like, you, it's not like you're like, all right, I'm going to set this money aside just in case, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Specifically for that, I mean, yes, you want to have as much emergency funding, but in today's world right now, I mean, there's already statistics out there that the majority of people don't even have their own emergency fund. And so I think that, you know, organizations like these are just so vitally important to be able to can just help everyone.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So without further ado, we're going to kick it off to the interview with Amy Rowley, the Mayday Foundation. Here it is. All right, so I'm here with Amy Rowley, the Executive Director of the Mayday Foundation. Amy, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
So can you give us a little history about the Mayday Foundation and what your organization does for the community?
Yes. I started the Mayday Foundation in January 2018, just a couple weeks after I had finished active treatment for breast cancer. So
okay.
I went through chemo, surgery, and radiation. And during that time, thankfully, my husband and I had everything going for us. We had grandparents who could help out with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
We had flexible employment that gave us time off when we needed it. I had friends that were, you know, bringing meals, and it was still extremely challenging. So as I was kind of finishing up my treatment, I started thinking about, you know, families who didn't have all of that support. Maybe they're here because they're based at JBLM and their family is somewhere else, or they already were financially strapped and getting gas for their car is a challenge.
Yeah.
And I looked around to see what other resources in our community were available to families coping with cancer while raising kids at home. And there really just wasn't a lot.
Yeah.
So based on my business background, I was able to quickly start a foundation. And thankfully, we have so many generous donors in this community that we were able to raise funds really quickly. In fact, in 2018, I had a fundraising goal that I met within the first 4 weeks. So either I set it really low or I needed to do something. I don't
Congratulations.
Know. Yeah, thank you. And just since that time, we've just continued to grow and be able to provide support for families who live locally, coping with cancer, and raising kids at home.
Right on. So you did speak about being a cancer survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about your experience in covering costs related to your treatments and diagnosis? Like, what was that like?
Yeah. What I realized is I had no idea what my insurance covered.
Yeah.
You know, I was the type, we were the type of family that we went to the doctor for a sinus infection and, you know, got a flu shot at the grocery store.
Sure.
And that was kind of about as much as we thankfully used our insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So I was shocked to learn that I had a $6,000 deductible,
whoa,
for example.
Yeah.
And like most cancer patients, my treatment went across 2 calendar years, which meant I paid that deductible twice.
Oh, wow.
So if you're listening to this right now, I would really encourage you to look and find out what your deductible is and make sure that you have that amount in savings.
Okay.
So that you're able to pay those bills that come up that are unexpected, whether it's a car wreck or an unexpected, you know, diagnosis or even just a broken arm. Those
sure.
bills, they ramp up really quickly.
Yeah.
In my case, my medical bills reached that $6,000 limit in, I think, the first 2 weeks.
Wow.
Just all the testing that you have to do before you even start chemo, just
okay.
to figure out where is the cancer and how big is it and what is the pathology of it.
Sure.
And those tests are not cheap. So
yeah.
It was an eye-opener for me in terms of even though I had great insurance that picked up, you know, 100% of the cost after that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big financial burden for families
oh,
to
yeah.
bear. So what I hope to, or what I am doing with the Mayday Foundation is we're covering household expenses, rent, utilities, gas, groceries, with the hope that that frees up money so that people can pay those medical bills and avoid bankruptcy and the financial toxicity that comes along with an unexpected diagnosis.
Yeah, yeah. $6,000, that's out of control.
Well, and that might not even be, you know, I know families that's like, they would wish it was
$6,000. It would be so much more.
So I think, and I think just understanding what your insurance is when
sure.
you're healthy
yeah.
is not something that as Americans we do so
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
But just understanding like, hey, I am going to be on the hook for that first,
mm-hmm.
for that deductible amount.
Yeah.
And it's going to ramp up quick.
Yeah. And insurance, talking about insurance is not sexy or fun.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody wants to do it when they're having fun.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Of course. So in preparing for this podcast, I Googled just the title of the podcast, Medical Bills and Financial Toxicity.
Okay.
The first four results on the page were just about financial toxicity or stress regarding cancer patients. Mm-hmm. So are out-of-pocket costs for cancer treatments just astronomical, or is this just talked about more with cancer treatments and patients?
I think it's probably a mix of both.
Okay.
One of the things that happens with cancer patients, especially, you know, people that are in their 30s to 50s and have kids at home, mm-hmm. is that that's usually the height of their income earning potential years, too.
Yeah.
And if you can't work because you're so sick from the side effects of cancer, that further exasperates the problem of not being able to cover your expenses. So I think that's the first part of it. And then the second part is, you know, we could talk about prescription drugs. That could probably be
that's a podcast. Topic. Yeah.
But I think one of the things that you're seeing in the industry right now is a lot of focus on not necessarily curing cancer, but having more creative ways of treating cancer.
Okay.
So that these 1940s chemo drugs, you know, that were developed in the height of World War II, are no longer maybe as effective as understanding the pathology of how cancer grows and stopping the growth process.
Okay.
And as a result, then you have more people that are living with cancer as a chronic disease rather than either cured or died.
Sure.
And so I think that also plays into why we're talking about this more, because if you're dealing with cancer as a chronic disease, that's not cheap. And so the amount of drugs that you need to be on, the follow-up care, the repeat scans, all of that adds to, you know, hitting that deductible year after year after year. So I think we are seeing a shift in the medical industry, and I'm sure there's researchers that probably are more skilled at talking about this than I am, but what I'm seeing is, and what gives me hope for my two daughters is, if God forbid they got breast cancer, that the treatment would be so much more effective, because we're looking at different ways to combat the growth of cancer rather than trying just to create this cure.
Sure. Well, just the concept of cancer as a chronic disease is kind of mind-blowing for me. Like, I know that there was that one of the Koch brother billionaires mm-hmm. had died, and he had cancer for years and years and years, and mm-hmm. it was just mind-blowing to me to think, okay, wait, he has it mm-hmm. still?
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible? Mm-hmm. Like, how do people live mm-hmm. doing that? That's just a mind-blowing thing.
You can have stage 4 breast cancer that's metastatic for decades.
That's madness.
You know, the downside of that is you live under this, you know, pretense of, like, it's going to come back. It's just when. And as any cancer patient will tell you, that anxiety can be really detrimental to someone's mental health too.
Absolutely. So I was reading a New York Times article that was written earlier this year by a cancer survivor who had participated in a clinical trial for a cancer drug.
Mm-hmm.
And the first line of her article is, "It sometimes seems baffling to me. I put my life on the line for research to produce a cancer medication that, if and when it's put on the market, I probably could not afford."
Yeah.
Then the article goes on to talk about financial toxicity and how this is a different economic crisis, but it's mm-hmm. in plain sight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So do you think that this is a financial crisis that we're all just ignoring?
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said before, no one wants to, like, talk about cancer. It's not something that we, you know, typically spend a lot of our time talking about.
Yeah.
So I think it does get pushed under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Unexpected medical bills still remain the number one reason why American families file for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And if you already have, if you've already gone through treatment and now your treatment is prolonged even longer, that toxicity doesn't go away.
Yeah.
And your ability to recover from that is extremely challenging for most families. So I think that we need to do a better job of talking about it. We need to do a better job of understanding our insurance deductibles as a society. We need to do a much better job of saving for unexpected costs. And so I think having those conversations up front and mm-hmm. not being afraid to talk about them could prevent families from ending up in financial toxicity in the first place.
Yeah.
So putting the $50 a month away into a healthcare savings account that your employer provides, yeah. or putting a little bit of money aside, you know, at the end of the year when you get a bonus for, you know, something unexpected, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, going out and buying a flashy new something or other, could be really what prevents that trajectory from continuing. And that's part of what I hope in the bigger picture when we're having these kinds of conversations is that we're starting to shift some of our thinking as a society, that we're not just spending money today and mm-hmm. not thinking about, you know, what our needs are going to be in the future. The rate of diagnosis for breast cancer alone is skyrocketing.
Yeah.
Part of that's because the diagnostic tools are better.
Okay.
Part of that's because the environment that we live in creates, you know, potentially creates more cancer in mm-hmm. women. But that, you know, if 1 in 8 women is diagnosed with breast cancer in their life, that those are not good.
No.
Those are not promising stats.
Yeah, that is not a good number.
So, and I think just based on the diagnosis rates that we're going to continue talking about the financial toxicity. We're going to continue talking about people's inability to pay their medical bills. And, you know, it's a concern that I have and I share with a lot of people.
Well, yeah. And I think too, that for any kind of treatment, of course, like the treatment is the predominant thing. Like you've got this diagnosis, you want to take care of the problem, but what other things happen around that? So right. like, I don't think that we have good conversations about, hey, I can't afford to pay rent now because right. I'm paying these medical bills.
Right, exactly. And I'm not sure that we always have a lot of compassion for people in those yeah. situations too. So I'm hoping by having conversations like we're having today that it's opening the door for people to talk about the financial cost of being a cancer patient. Yeah. And when I was first diagnosed, I wasn't really in a great frame of mind, but
sure.
but another cancer patient had told me, she's like, hey, once you're a cancer patient, you're always a cancer patient.
Yeah.
You know, my kids will always have to write on their healthcare forms that their mom had breast cancer. You know, yeah. it's something that's pervasive to our society.
Yeah.
There was a stat that I read as I was starting the Mayday Foundation that there's almost 3 million children that are living with parents who are currently receiving treatment for okay. cancer in the United States. And that number means that those families are under a lot of stress.
Yeah.
And if we can take some of that stress away by either helping with household expenses or trying to get some of the healthcare costs under control, then we're creating stability for those kids
yeah.
and hopefully not turning that into lifelong problems for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, like you said earlier, we could have a whole discussion about prescription pills and costs and medical providers. But having gone through a treatment and then also supporting people who are going through treatments themselves, do you think medical providers and plans could do more to make these treatments cost effective?
I'm not sure I'm that skilled at talking about that.
Sure.
I, you know, just from my own personal experience, I feel that the care I received was what was in my best interest.
Okay.
I feel like the healthcare providers that treated me here in Olympia at Providence looked at what was best for Amy Raleigh, not necessarily what, you know, was I don't even think that they understand how much it costs sometimes.
Sure.
For example, I took a recently licensed drug right at the end of my treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go through 3 rounds of refusals from the insurance company before I was permitted to take
oh, wow.
this drug. I ended up stopping the drug because the side effects were horrible and
yeah.
I didn't feel like the cost, the risks outweighed the benefit.
Sure.
But my healthcare provider was really encouraging of going through the process, helped with, you know, sending a letter back saying why I should be allowed to take the drug.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I feel like they definitely, healthcare providers in general, definitely have the right frame of mind. But I feel like the cost part is so separated from what they do on a day-to-day basis that I don't know that they always know.
Sure.
And so I don't think that they're necessarily recommending or ordering tests just to order them.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes there isn't a lot of discussion about how much does this actually cost the patient? And I feel like if we had more two-way dialogue with, hey, this, you know, this is going to cost me $500. Mm-hmm. Is this the best test? Is there a cheaper way of doing this? Can we even just wait and see?
Mm-hmm.
I think that those dialogues and that two-way conversation could be really helpful. A lot of times I don't even think billing representatives inside a healthcare facility know until they submit the claim and get the response from insurance. So it becomes this, it feels very archaic to me.
Sure.
It feels like as consumers of healthcare, we should know what we're paying for,
yeah,
and how much it's going to cost and what percentage our insurance is going to pick up. And we should be able to have that information up front and then make those decisions with our providers. When I sat in the chemo chair, I would sit there for 4 hours, 4 to 5 hours.
Okay.
I had four different drugs through an IV, and just sitting there was $40,000.
Wow.
Dripping through my veins.
Wow.
And it's insane. Oh. And the only way I knew that was from just reading my explanation of benefits, because I was curious.
Sure, yeah.
And it didn't change, you know, I still would have done it. It didn't change my decisions about mm-hmm. my care, but it's just so shocking.
Yeah. You're like, so there's shocking. Like a year's worth of salary,
yeah,
right here in the room
those,
with you.
Two, exactly. Two of those drugs were drugs that were developed in the 40s. So they've definitely
oh, wow.
paid their, you know, research and development costs back to the pharmaceutical
yeah,
companies.
Yeah.
So I think there's a, you know, I don't want to disparage pharmaceutical companies. They put in a tremendous amount of research time and effort and resources.
Yeah.
And, you know, they should be paid what they're worth.
Sure, yeah.
But it just feels like, as I said before, that there's this disconnect that the consumers don't understand and don't have access to the information mm-hmm. to be able to make good choices.
Yeah, it does seem very siloed in different aspects. So I've gone in for just like random things, like you had mentioned before, your mm-hmm. diagnosis. Just you go in and you use your health insurance. Mm-hmm. You're there. You're mm-hmm. talking to your doctor. And of course, your doctor wants to give you care.
Mm-hmm.
They're not so concerned about how much it's costing you because
right.
they
right.
want you to be better.
Right.
So, yeah, it does seem that that's a siloed group as opposed to those billing providers who are like, well, this is how much all these things cost
yeah.
and you're responsible.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And you don't know that until after the appointment.
Yes, that's true.
You know? And
yeah.
it could be
Surprise.
Weeks. Yeah, it could be yeah. weeks later you get these bills, and then in some cases you have a bill from this doctor and this lab and this
mm-hmm.
facility, you know, so you end up with three bills and, you know, I
yeah,
don't know. It
yeah.
seems like there's an opportunity there for the industry to kind of be overhauled. But
yeah, sew that up better, make
yeah.
it a little more user-friendly.
I think so, yeah.
So, and we're talking about costs and financial burdens, but do you think that these kinds of costs are getting better for the average person, or they're getting worse, or they're staying about the same?
My gut says that they're getting worse.
Yeah?
Yeah, and my gut says we're going to continue to talk about this for a very long time. Yeah,
well, I
don't feel like it's getting better.
Yeah, and it's a hot topic with
mm-hmm.
regarding like the presidential debates
mm-hmm.
that are
mm-hmm.
coming and
mm-hmm.
that whole election cycle, like
mm-hmm.
costs of healthcare, costs of prescription medicines.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem overall that it's getting worse.
It seems like it to me, and just from the circle of people that I'm exposed to,
sure,
it seems like it's not getting better. I think we've done a better job in our society of covering routine care
okay.
and preventative care.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's getting better, but in terms of these life-threatening diagnoses, it just doesn't. It seems like cost sort of gets thrown out the door,
yeah.
And that anyone can charge whatever they want to charge because you're going to pay it.
A little wild, wild west there.
Yeah, good analogy.
Well, yeah, and if you have to have care that is over an extended period, of course that's going to cost more, but the management of those costs, that's not going well.
That's not going well, and it's not going away.
Yeah.
And it's a big burden for families to keep on top of it and keep track of it. And also it's not spread out evenly throughout the year. You know, you're going to get hit
yeah.
in January, February, potentially with 100% of your deductible costs.
Uh-huh.
So being able to spread that out, you know, in some cases you can work out payment plans
sure.
so that it better matches what your income you know, cycle yeah. is. But in a lot of cases, that's just not an option. You know, yeah. you're dealing with big healthcare organizations that don't necessarily share the same compassion that a small, you know, one person healthcare provider might be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is the toxicity of having these bills, these medical bills, while also trying to cope with cancer,
mm-hmm.
it's very overwhelming for families.
Yeah. Yeah, I can bet that it would just drag people down and just be that weight.
Yes, on exactly. them that exactly.
They didn't anticipate.
Yeah. So when I'm talking to families and saying, "Yes, I can pay your rent. Yes, I can pay, you know, your water bill. Mm-hmm. Yes, I can pay, you know, to keep your electricity on." The weight, the sigh of relief that yeah. they feel, even if it's just for a couple months, you know, we're stepping in to be sort of that short-term emergency support.
Yeah.
It just, you can just hear it in their voices. They're just so relieved and so appreciative. And in most cases they start crying, you
yeah,
know, but,
yeah.
You know, and to be able to say yes to something, when, you know, people are at the stage of their life where they, you know, just feel really down.
Yeah.
It's really a rewarding place to be.
Nice. So let's say that someone hears this podcast and they want to start beginning, or they want to begin giving to the Mayday Foundation.
Uh-huh.
Can you talk about what donations do for your organization?
Yes. So as I mentioned before, we pay household expenses, so mm-hmm. rent, utilities, gas, groceries. We have done a little bit of house cleaning, a little bit of yard cleanup
okay.
for a couple families. So we pay those expenses directly to third parties. So a rent check is going directly to the landlord.
Okay.
The water bill is going directly to the city. Utility bills are going directly to the energy company.
Yeah.
And I think that gives donors a peace of mind that, you know, what they're giving their hard-earned dollars for is actually going to what, you know,
yeah.
we say it's going towards. In some cases, we've been able to work out rent reductions for some
okay.
families, just having a third party involved and talking to the landlord. You know, we've been able to have a couple months rent forgiven, which is
nice.
A really nice
yeah.
Way to partner with some very compassionate landlords. But those donations of any dollar amount make such a difference. You know, we're able to pool together maybe $10 donations and buy a couple tanks of gas for a family,
yeah.
or we're able to make sure that there's groceries and there's food in the refrigerator when kids get home from school. So all of those, you know, a donation of any size, it doesn't have to be, oh, I'm going to cover a month's rent for somebody.
Yeah.
You know, a small amount can be pooled together with other donors to make a big difference. And, you know, we meet the families where they need it. So
sure.
some families, you know, don't need housing assistance,
mm-hmm.
But they do need, you know, their car to be fixed. So we have
okay.
paid some mechanic bills so that they can get to their appointments.
Yeah.
Kind of just all those things that can help parents in this situation just kind of have a little bit easier life, you know,
yeah.
just make life a little bit brighter. As I mentioned before, it is short term. So we do have a family maximum amount. It's, you know, far exceeds what anyone else is handing out. So that feels good. And we try to make it very immediate and practical.
Yeah.
So it's what the family needs, not what I think they might need.
Yeah.
And it's immediate. If I talk to somebody today, you know, there's gas cards going out in the mail today. There's, you know, rent checks going out in the mail. There's not a lot of bureaucracy that's slowing
nice.
Down this process. I don't want to see anyone's tax returns or anything of
yeah.
that nature. I should clarify that families get referred to the Mayday Foundation from social workers
okay.
and other healthcare providers. So there is some validation going
yeah.
in that this is a family in need, that they have a financial hardship. It's just not happening by me.
Sure,
so,
sure. You get to do the other part.
I get
part.
To do the other
yeah.
part. I get to do the fun part of like handing out money. But donations, you know, that's how we're making it. And so since January, we have raised money from over 200 unique people. So
okay.
that's, you know, just anyone who, you know, wants to donate, or there's also corporate gifts. It's also some grant funding and some family foundations that have chosen to give. So it's a very diverse group of people, which makes me feel good because it's not one big donor that has given us a big chunk of money. And this is like a lot of people who feel like this is the mission and a nonprofit that they want to support. And as you know, we have so many options for nonprofits that we can choose to give our hard-earned dollars to. So I'm appreciative of every dollar that someone chooses to share with the Mayday Foundation.
Right on. So before we go, do you have any upcoming events or programs you'd like to highlight?
Yes. So our biggest fundraiser happens on May Day, which is May 1st. And we start in kind of early April. Mm-hmm. And it is May Day flower bouquets.
Okay.
So it's kind of that old childhood tradition of picking a bouquet of flowers and leaving it on a neighbor's doorstep.
Yeah.
To celebrate kind of the start of spring. And what we do in this case is that people order a little bouquet and they can send it to anyone. In this case, still it's Thurston County. So if you're listening outside Thurston County, watch for us to grow. But and we'll deliver it to their doorstep. So May 1st is kind of that big fundraiser. We'll also be part of a Give Local campaign in early November, and would love to have support from donors during that time. And since we're here, I'd love to plug the Combined Fund Drive, which the Mayday Foundation is a participant in the Fund Drive. So we love donations through that as well.
Right on. Well, Amy, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and telling me about the Mayday Foundation and all the awesome things you're doing.
Thank you for having me, Heather. It's been a pleasure.
With Amy Rowley, the executive director of the Mayday Foundation, talking about her organization and the amazing things that they do. Like I said before, this is one of those things that just that got me. So it's just, one of those things that if you can't afford life and something emergency happens, where are you? You're stuck.
Right. What's one thing from that interview that just really like made you feel like now this is it? Like, I want to start helping this organization.
Because I've been there.
Yeah.
I've been there. And it's not, like, my medical costs have ever been, I'm thankful, like, there's some wood right there, that I haven't had some extreme medical costs. Yeah. But I've had costs that have definitely been unexpected and have thrown me for a loop for months.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even, like, up to a year where I've just had a hard time to recover.
Right.
You know, we did have that recession in 2008, which was not fun.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It was definitely not fun.
No.
So, yeah, it's just something where it's like, I can totally relate to that.
Right.
So I did do some research for this particular podcast.
Break it down.
Yeah, break it down about these kinds of things. So when it comes to, there's a national nonprofit, Family Reach, that did this whole kind of study about a bunch of different costs for patients who have cancer, the financial burden of cancer. They said adult patients are 2.65 times more likely to file for bankruptcy than patients of a similar age without cancer.
Mm.
Patients who filed for bankruptcy had a 79% greater risk of early mortality than those who did not. So financial burdens, they do take a serious, serious
toll. Well,
I have
to imagine that, you know, as the patient yourself, seeing your family going to have to, not only with you, but you feeling, you know, for them and that, like, I, you know, it's just so sad. I was listening to an NPR report recently, just similar to this, of like, just the medical costs alone for an individual feeling that towards a family, like, it's very hard to, like, can you imagine having the stress of the you know,
your... Like, you have this disease.
You have a disease.
You have this issue that you have to deal with.
And then on top of that, you're looking at your costs. You. Yeah.
That's just it's so not sad. The disease that's killing you. It's the medical costs. Yeah. There was this other thing when I was looking up doing research for this podcast. It was debt or death.
Wow.
That was the header. That was the title of it. And I was like, those are my options?
Right.
Wow. This is terrible. Cancer patients and their families pay about $4 billion a year for out-of-pocket costs associated with their treatment.
Wow.
And then I did speak to Amy about this particular article, and I'll post it to the site, called The Financial Toxicity of Illness. It's from the New York Times, and the author, Susan Gubar, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce her last name, G-U-B-A-R, she talked about enrolling in a study to try this new drug that wasn't out on the market, but she was trying it. And pretty much for her, she was trying it because she couldn't afford stuff.
Oh, so she got paid.
So she did this whole trial, and she didn't have to make these, like, super high payment costs. But when she talked about the drug, she had said, even if I could have guessed that this drug would be effective, where would I have come up with the money to keep paying for it? I've already used it for 6 years at what could have been a cost of $1,440,000.
Wow.
Right?
Wow. So she was willing to take a chance on a drug that is just as a trial.
Mm-hmm. Just to see if it would work. Mm-hmm. But it was more about the cost.
Right.
Than
wow.
anything.
That's crazy.
It's madness.
But that's the unfortunate thing of
that's our reality.
Where we are right now. So it's great to know that there is organizations that are able to help, you know, keep families afloat while coping with for cancer.
Absolutely.
To help pay those, you know, rent costs or utilities or gas and groceries.
Yeah. If you can ease the burden just a little bit, that mm-hmm. eases the weight on someone's shoulders for sure. And the shoulders of the entire family.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about upcoming events. As you guys may remember from a podcast or two ago, Philip Kerrigan, our beloved program manager, he is now gone. He has moved on to be an executive director with one of our member charities.
Yeah.
And so he'll be, you know, popping in every now and then when we allow him to come back to the podcast.
That's for you, Philip.
When we allow him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to release a podcast for the NFC North because Philip is a Green Bay Packer fan. I'm a Bears fan. Mm. And we got a coworker who is a Minnesota Vikings fan. So you'll hear his voice. Yeah. But he just won't be around.
Exactly. But if you do have any questions or concerns or anything that you need to ask the CFD staff or maybe how to just get attention with him to say goodbye, feel free to direct any of your questions or comments to CFD. So that'd just be cfd@sos.wa.gov. Or you can always give us a call. You can find our phone number online at give.wa.gov, or it's 360-902-4162.
Yes. So if you guys need anything that Philip would address for you, just send them to us and we'll take care of it. We've also completed all of our training.
Thank
hands
goodness.
In the air.
Oh,
they
my
were
gosh.
Extensive this year.
It
we
was
were
over 16.
All over the state.
Yeah. Yeah. It was insane.
Yeah. A little bit.
But I
much.
Love it. Yeah. I mean, I love it because we got to hang out with volunteers. We got to talk to them about what they're doing. But mm-hmm. man, it is a travel.
It is a travel. Month and a half. Yeah. Travel 2 months there. But if you guys need anything regarding trainings, let us know. Again, cft@sos.wa.gov. We just had the Run CFD DRS Nerd Herd. It was at Capitol Lake
on
September 14th. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Their silent auction raised almost $1,000.
Amazing.
They had like 150 people out there, mm-hmm. and the weather actually participated.
That's good.
Yeah, it was a little windy, but it was great.
That's
so
good.
It was a great, great turnout.
Did everyone dress up as nerds?
Yeah, you had your bow ties, you had your suspenders. Mm. There were a lot of rainbow suspenders and like the headgear.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
There was actually a couple of people who had a little headgear teeth like stuff.
Headgear teeth.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. And then the glasses with the tape.
Oh, yeah.
Standard.
Of course.
Standard
of course,
issue, right?
Of course. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, so it was a good turnout. And then we also had the Golf for Veterans mm-hmm. Tournament at Eagles Pride. How was that since you were there?
It was really good. It was actually really awesome. Secretary of State Kim Wyman was able to attend.
Very nice.
Said she gave some good words out to the golfers, you know, putt well. and then it was also really awesome. We had Representative Carolyn Eslick, who attended as a board member with the charity H3 that will be getting the proceeds. It was just a really amazing time. There's a moment when one of the golfers was really inspired by a charity that was at the hole.
Uh-huh.
And he decided, it was actually a guy from DES, he decided that the little girl, you know, they're sharing their story, and the little girl there really wanted golf lessons. So he rallied all the golfers, and they raised over $370 to get this little girl golf lessons. Her father was mistakenly shot and killed.
Oh.
Through gang violence, even though he wasn't part of that.
Yeah.
And so the grandmother and his daughter were there, and it was just this inspiring story. And just seeing people just right then and there, off the cuff, just be like, we see a problem, we want to help, and then created a need. Tears and joy were just all celebrated throughout the event. The weather stayed. It was a little misty here and there, but everybody had tons of fun. We had 22 teams. Thanks to Top Rung Brewing for their donations, and it was just such a great, great experience.
Nice, and this is like the eighth year for this.
Seventh
year? Okay, so it's been going for a while. Right on. And then right around the corner, believe it or not, campaign is about to kick off. So the first week to give is September 30th through October 6th. That's the week, famously, if you guys remember, coffee cards. If you make a $5 donation, one time, monthly, or you up a donation by $5, you'll get a $5 Starbucks card. We also have double days during that week. It's the Thursday.
Yep, the third.
And on that day, if you make another $5 donation to the CFD specifically, then you get another $5.
Got to use our special link that we'll be putting up there, and that will help you get the card that you need.
Yeah. And then finally...
Oh, big shout out, though, to WSCCU for those coffee cards. They actually upped their increase of sponsorship this year for that, so we'll definitely have everybody covered. It's going
to
be great.
See, it's fun. WSECU is Starbucks' first week to give sponsor, as well as the sponsor of this podcast.
What? Shout out again to WSECU.
Right on. So then our last but not least, we got our big, big, big event, CFT Masquerade Ball. It is here in the Capitol Building, October 19th. It starts at 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. There are tickets available. The VIP tickets are sold out.
Yes, people, get your tickets today.
So we are definitely getting close to that. Hey, sellout point for the rest of them, so mm-hmm. get your tickets now.
Yes, it is black tie, so it's just a formal, no crazy theme this year. But, you know, get your Masquerade Ball masks and have a great time for charity.
Yeah, we love it. So with that, that wraps up our podcast about medical bills and financial toxicity. Thank you so much, Jerrica, for joining me.
You are wonderfully welcome.
Oh, thank you. Have a good day, everyone.